football on off the ball.
Trying to run forward and give us that energy. I think probably the penalty, I probably should do better. I probably should get the shot off a little bit earlier, in my opinion. Probably lacking that little bit of sharpness, just for whatever reason. I think I'll get stronger as the season goes on. But
join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Dara Smith-Notton and Alan Quinnan in studio. First, here's Hugh Farrelly over the weekend, recalling the few times he played against our very own Quinny and Brian O'Driscoll in the AIL. Take a listen.
I just want, we're here to pay homage to the AIL, and I would mention one thing that didn't come up earlier when we were talking about the good old days. I think that Shannon team of the 90s, which I was unfortunate enough to play against a few times, was one of the greatest teams I've ever seen. I was with Lansdowne in 94 when we went down there and got beaten 39-0. And we had Angus McKean, Eric Elwood, Conor O'Shea, Brian Glennon, Stephen Rooney. Mm. We had a good team and they wiped the four of us. The late, great Anthony Foley, I was phenomenal that day. He got capped a few months later. And that team went on to win four in a row. It got so bad, John, at the end, they were passing the ball like soccer, going, way, way. I always remember walking shell-shocked over to a line-out, and this Limerick Shannon fan looks at me and goes, safe home now, boy, thanks for coming. They were a phenomenal team. And one of your regular contributors, Alan Quinlan, who gets, whenever his career comes up, you talk about Munster, Ireland, you want to see him playing for Shannon. He was phenomenal, and he'd never shut up. Like, yap.
He never shut up anyway when
he'd be there like you. Terry Kings was our hooker. He's going to miss. He'd just be in your ear the whole time. But what a player.
Brian O'Driscoll played a couple of times.
Brian O'Driscoll played twice, as far as I know, for Blackrock, and I happened to be playing that day. He'd just been capped by Ireland on the summer tour to Australia in 99, and then he went to the World Cup, and he was there for the loss to Argentina in Lons, whatever. And we had a Kiwi coach called Scotty Holden, and he was like, he didn't rate Irish rugby. He was like, don't mind this O'Driscoll kid, he's overrated. O'Driscoll then intercepts a ball and runs 75 metres for a try, like we're going like this. And as he was walking back, we had a hooker, Connor Toomey, known as CT, and he just walks past O'Driscoll, goes, pity you couldn't do that in Lons, boy. And then walked on.
Quinny, you liked whispering in the hooker's ears. You're going to miss that.
I kind of missed that banter, yeah. Actually, they were great days. My time with Shannon when I started was just very lucky that I went into a team that was strong and so powerful, and won the All-Ireland League four times in a row when it was, no disrespect to it now, because obviously it's still very big, but it was different.
Yeah.
All the internationals you used to play, and...
Was the team already winning when you made it? Or did you come in just as it started to win?
Just as it started to win. The first year was only played a very bit part, 95-96 season. It was incredible though to come into that group of players, and obviously it happens in sports. Title defenses can be hard, and I think Dublin, Kilkenny, winning All Ireland's. How many did Dublin win?
Limerick,
you win
six.
Five, six. Yeah. Limerick, Kilkenny got to four. The team kind of broke up a little bit then after that in Shannon, and professionalism kicked in, and probably a year later none of us are playing for our club again, which was a big thing, and probably hasn't helped Limerick rugby in particular, that whole ability to see the internationals, to see the Munster players in around the club on a regular basis. But I was very lucky in a sense that I joined a team that the young Munsters, Gary Owen, Crescent, Bowes, they were down a division or two, but the competitiveness in Limerick was just phenomenal. To play those local derbies and then go on the road, and Mary's won the league yesterday. It was a phenomenal win for them against Clontarf, and it was a great crowd, and the vibrancy of the All-Ireland League is definitely very, very high. And it did bring back memories of playing against the likes of Mary's, Trevor Brennan, Victor Costello, Dennis Hickey.
Good team.
All that team.
On the specifics of being Lippy, was that encouraged?
Or was
that
just to get away from all that they're talking
were
about?
Did that come naturally to you, or was it part of the...
But I think it was... probably just the competitiveness. But I don't think I was ever insulting to anyone that I could go, in a sense, I wouldn't say anything personal unless there was you and I were having a fight and it got nasty and you, I felt you were...
I'd cross the line.
Yeah, it wasn't, it was never personal stuff because, you know, I could always, thankfully, I could always go to people after a game and say, look, sorry, I was mouthing about something there or I was in your ear and or I was trying to influence. It was usually probably just, I always described it as probably saying what you think out loud when you should have just kind of turned down the tone a little bit. You know, when you question a decision or someone's offside or,
yeah.
There was a lot of that going on, particularly at the start. But obviously when you get to...
when the ref mic got invented, you were a bit...
Yeah, and then your referees are probably listening to you a lot, yeah. Anthony Foley, God be good to him, you say, but Eddie Halvey and myself, when we played in that Shannon back row, which was fairly decent back row, we had Mick Galway, Brian Rigney in front of us, the second rows... You know, we had a really good team and it was a great team. Pat Murray was playing, Conor McDermott, Billy O'Shea, Niall O'Shea and those Shannon teams. They were phenomenal. Niall O'Donovan was coach, Brian O'Brien. I was just very lucky I came into that group, but actually you say that it was like having a kind of a stereo system on either side, even in the back of the scrum with Eddie Halvey and myself. But they were great days, and definitely when I watched the AIL final yesterday between Mary's and Clontarf, it brings back those memories of playing those games, you know, and how important and special it was to people. Times change, and you know, some of my son's friends in school up here, they're involved in St Mary's Rugby Club, and you know, I was. Pleased for some of them, and I've got to know in the last few years, but some people don't really realise what it was like and how important it was to us and our development, and
oh, yeah.
They were very, very special days, you know, and it's great to see the AIL being vibrant again. And a couple of years ago Mary's were down the division a bit, and for them winning it yesterday, I can't say I'm a fan of anybody's. I'm not kind of, you know, but obviously I know people involved in the club.
Yeah.
And I was really pleased that they won it. And yeah, it was great game yesterday to watch.
Where do you want to start?
We do the Six Nations. Dara, you were in France.
How are things, lads?
Clermont-Ferrand.
Beautiful city. Disappointing night, I would say, on Saturday night. Obviously, the game was characterised by missed chances and missed opportunities. Ireland had two tries disallowed in the opening 30 minutes and a third held up. And then in the second half, obviously, France got on the front foot and very hard to stop a French team with the brass band behind them in the corner and the French fans in full song. So,
was that first France try definitely grounded?
It was kind of hard to see in the stadium, but I watched the highlights back and I was not convinced.
The Irish players seemed to accept the decision and it didn't go to TMO.
My inkling was that she must have grounded it on the initial kind of contact with the ground, and that's why Aoife Wafer kind of looked like she wasn't trying to hold it up anymore when it looked like she was holding it up.
But you say it wasn't here in the stadium, it was equally ambiguous watched on TV.
Yeah, I didn't actually hear anything about that after. There was no kind of controversy post-match or anything like that. So I presume they must have scored it, and there was no TMO check, obviously, either. So there was obviously no noise from the crowd to suggest.
I know you spoke with Aoife Wafer afterwards, and we'll get to that shortly. But in the second half, is it simplistic or overly so to say the French showed their class and the better side won? I presume Ireland played their part, in your opinion, in their defeat here.
Yeah, I think Ireland kind of maybe showed their hand in the first half a little bit in what they were planning to do. When Ireland did have the ball in the second half, they kind of set up shop and carried, picked and went, and it was all a bit predictable. But once, you know, we say about France getting going, it sounds very simplistic, but that's exactly what happened. Once they started to get through contact, free their hands, offloads were flowing, their impact off the bench, they're bringing a lot of size, a lot of power off the bench, made a huge impact. And Ireland's kind of bomb squad that they've been using, the five or six subs off the bench, didn't have quite the same influence on the game that we saw over the last couple of weekends, which was disappointing. Eve Higgins was very good, but really you're looking at those forwards coming off the bench and expecting some type of impact, and there just wasn't really much coming from it. So look, I think it goes both ways. Ireland maybe tailed off as the game went on, tired a bit. That first 30 minutes, as great as they played and as many chances as they created, that takes a lot out of you in a rugby game. And France seemed to feed off the crowd then going into the 45th, 50th minute. Once, like I say, I kind of joked about it, but the brass band in the corner, the difference that makes in those games, couldn't you play in those stadiums before? The crowd just get behind the team, and it feels like an impossible task to try and stop them at that point.
Yeah, I thought a very difficult game in a sense to accept for them, because they had so many chances and opportunities, and I think that was significant. The power off the bench for France definitely had an effect, and they were hanging on for dear life, France. Ireland played superb, and look, I think it's very, very obvious that debate about, you know, getting to a very good level. I think we're at a good level now, and the consistency is there, and I think there's improvement has been drastic in the last few years. I still think that the physical conditioning side of things, even though it's closed a fair bit, I think there's still a gap between England, France, New Zealand, these teams who have that extra power and probably a few more years of that full-time conditioning in them.
I think that's just the amount the Irish players aren't really playing. Like, a lot of that team are obviously playing with the provinces, and they only play a handful of games a year, and then you have the Celtic Challenge, which is on and off,
because that was very, very intense, that game. And to be fair, it was like the pace and the tempo that they're able to play with now is very impressive. 38 missed tackles is too many tackles missed. And there's reasons why they missed some of them. The power, the pace. I thought their scramble defence at times was superb. Some of the big French forwards, when you know, they were getting over the gain line, I think the support tackling and stuff was brilliant to get them down eventually, but that bit of power told. And they probably have, and I mean this respectfully to everyone, they probably have a couple of Aoife Wafers or Aaron Kings. Whereas Aaron King and Ethan Wafer are just, they're at a level that's just phenomenal, really, in the women's game. And the rest of the girls, brilliant. Cliona Maloney.
She was excellent, yeah.
Just, I loved the little bit of McDonald with that extra little bit of niggle as well. And they weren't getting bullied, which again, they can take a lot out of this game. Right across the board, players putting their bodies on the line, being really physical. Their post-contact meters show that, you know, they'd more post-contact meters than France. They had more ball, more possession territory. So it's just about probably a little bit of street smarts and being clinical, because I think for France's tries, there was just, they didn't have to work as hard as Ireland's.
Yeah.
And we often hear that in sport. It doesn't matter how hard, whether you have to work, you still get the same amount of points, whether you have to go 20 phases or two phases. But yeah, they're probably just that little bit more advanced. And, you know, if they were back in Dublin next week, it was a back-to-back game, you know, you'd fancy Ireland to get a result. So the home advantage, as you said, the band playing the corner, the combustive nature of that stadium, it's like so close to the ground.
There's 17,000, so it was a sellout. I think some of the boxes towards the top of the stands weren't
they're
open.
They're literally overhanging the side of the stadium.
Insane.
Like, it's so close.
They said it was a tougher atmosphere to play in than Twickenham, which was 77,000.
Yeah, it's very intimidating there.
Yeah.
So small margins, again, I think some of the missed tackles, maybe some of the kick. We only kicked the ball 14 times. Not having a box kick option
is
very, very
issue,
significant, and it's a big issue.
We struggled
Emily
at
Lane
the weekend.
Is a wonderful
and
player,
well.
So we don't see her even attempting the box kick. So maybe it's something that she's just not comfortable with doing. But
I think it's not a part of the game plan, because even when Avian Riley was starting last year, it still wasn't a part of that game. And it's something I think
just getting out of your own defensive.
There's two sides to it, right? So there's actually utilizing it and getting those benefits, but then there's also being used to playing against it in training. So we really struggle defending box kicks as well. We saw it against Italy in Galway a couple of weekends ago. The little chip over the top, we had no kind of defence mechanism to combat that. And then at the weekend against France, Stacey Flood and Dana, whoever was in the backfield, were struggling underneath that box kick. And it wasn't a particularly windy game. It doesn't get too windy in Clermont because the city's like surrounded by mountains and volcanoes, so like the wind doesn't really get in. So it's just that kind of those reps underneath box kicks and understanding the flight of that ball. It's particularly when it's, you know, our fullback is Stacey Flood, who's come from a sevens background where, you know, box kicks are, they don't exist in sevens. So I think, yeah, there's two sides of it. We would see a lot of benefit from it in terms of exiting and getting out of our own 22, but then also being able to attack off the opposition's box kicks.
The skill levels, though, and the ability to attack is like chalk and cheese from a few years ago, and their accuracy around breakdowns and all that kind of stuff. So it was an incredibly intense match and an incredible effort that... they definitely could have got more out of it. It seems like a bit of an unfair scoreline, but that's that's what happens when you get kind of up at the top and you're playing the top teams, that this stuff can happen. I've played in games back in many times where you end up dominating and the opposition just can pluck a couple of scores and frustrate you. And France, I'm not saying France didn't deserve to be in the position they're in. They're a brilliant team. But certainly if Ireland were able to take some of those chances, and you look at the way they started the game, the two disallowed tries, the ball held up over the line a couple of times, so many opportunities there. And I felt if Ireland had a little bit of a, when it was 7-7, and if they got to that 14-7, you know, if they got their noses ahead there, they could have played a little, tailored their game a little bit then to maybe kick a little bit more and keep it a little bit tighter at times. So it was tiring, probably, the way they played, so chaotic for so long. They kept going, and that has to be applauded. But you can manage the tempo of the game probably a little bit better. So very small margins. I thought it was a fantastic effort out of the team, and in the end, probably a little bit of an unfair scoreline.
You mentioned 38 missed tackles is too many. What is an acceptable number of missed tackles in an occasion like
zero.
That?
Zero. No, it's impossible for any team at any level. I think you... I don't know where... you know, being in the low teens...
Right.
Is a good, you know, it depends how much. Ireland had more possession, so they've, you know, 54% possession, 60% territory, so they have the ball more. Their carries are 156 to 123, which kind of indicates a dominance with the ball. It's just, and then you would say, well, that clinical side or ruthless side is probably not at the same level as France is, the way they're able to do that. But yeah, just tightening up in defence, and it comes from pressure. And look, they have a lot of power, France, you know, very big physical side. So at times there was, if they tightened up their defence, you get down to, you know, 15, 14, you know, in below 20, I'm not saying it's an acceptable number because coaches would always, when you're up over the 20 mark of missed tackles, you have a problem. Now, some of the, if you have a really good scramble defence and you have people that get back and cover, you mightn't be significantly hit, but usually missed tackles come when you get into multi-phase. They don't happen that often in first, second phase where somebody falls off a tackle, because you're better organised. So when the chaos starts to happen, it's really, you know, getting connected there and being that little bit better. But
will we hear from Aoife Wafer?
Yeah, let's.
Yeah. I was speaking to her post-match. What do you want to hear about first? She was speaking about the France game in general, for her personally being a bit of a grudge match. Or do you want to hear that first?
That's what we have, yeah.
Yeah, so she was speaking about, or I asked her about whether the loss of the weekend was a setback for this group, being the talk going into this, that they were very confident ahead of this fixture.
Talk coming into this was that the aim was to break into the top two in the Six Nations. Do you feel like this is at all a setback for this group, or do you feel like you'll come together and move on?
No, I don't think it's a setback. like I said, you learn a lot from these sort of games. We've shown that we can compete with tier one nations, like we've shown it in the past too, and we've shown it again today. And it's just that kind of last, I don't even know when all the tries came in, maybe 10 minutes or so, or, but like again, that game would have been very different if we'd finished those opportunities in the first half. So yeah, no, I don't think it'll be a setback at all. I think this team is one that don't take step backs. We don't breathe out. We go again, and yeah, we'll have Wales now in 2 weeks in Aberdeen Stadium, and then Scotland in the Aviva Stadium. So yeah, we can't wait to get home, play back on our shores, and hopefully put out big performances there.
The other big talking point was obviously it was a revenge match. Here she is talking about that grudge element.
Did you see this game as, for yourself personally at all, as a grudge match? We know what happened at the World Cup, obviously, or did you kind of just brush that off and just take it as another game?
I think, like, we have to be all honest and say that, like, we wanted to win this off the back of that World Cup game. Like, I think it was a game coming into being, like it is that kind of thing of you want to get one back at them, but it is also that thing of, like, you have to look at yourself, because if you focus too much on France, then you forget what you're good at, you forget, like, what we can do. So the focus all week has just been on us, kind of different set piece moves, different ways that we can attack them, and just kind of sticking to our strengths, because like I said, like, if you focus too much on them, then you lose sight of what you can do.
It was funny because Axel Berthomieu, the player that was cited for biting her back in the World Cup, came off quite early, about 45, 50 minutes into the game. It's like, they never really kind of met on the pitch at any point, or notably, there was no like one-on-one tackle. So, she was excellent. I know she's always excellent, but she was particularly brilliant at the weekend, and she definitely deserved more of that game herself.
Just to wrap on the Six Nations, are we where you expected Ireland to be after three games?
I really thought they'd win at the weekend. I really thought they would. Just speaking to players in the run-up and kind of feeling that belief coming off them, and they really, really felt like they had them this year. Like, it was obviously a tall task. It would have been history. I've never beaten France on French soil, but I really, really thought they had a really good chance, and they went close. I know the scoreline doesn't suggest that, but they really, really did have a chance on Saturday night. That's why I asked her about it being a setback, because I feel like this group is better than one win from three games. I know, obviously, you've played the two best teams in the competition, but I really think they're better than that.
Well, they have two games left to bounce back. Two games left in the URC season as well for almost everybody at this stage. Quinny, what's going to happen?
I'm not sure. I think it's that Connacht Munster game is really significant. I think Munster could afford to lose that game and win against the Lions, and
they've got the Lions at home
possibly,
in the last game,
possibly still be in the top four, get into the top four. They're fifth now. There's so many permutations. I think Connacht, because they're away against Edinburgh in the last one, they have to beat Munster. And
now Edinburgh won't have anything to play for, really. Although maybe they have.
But of course, that's an argument to say that, they're not playing for a top eight themselves, or being in Europe, they won't make it. They've had a really poor season. But they're very, very tricky games. And look, I think they're capable. I think they showed what they did last week against the Stormers. Hard to do it twice in South Africa. They're 28-0 down at the start of that second half this week, and they showed a fair bit of fight, but they were only they were never going to win that game. So Leinster was the surprise of the weekend, and the position they're in, they're not they've two home games, so I kind of wrote out the fixtures. Ulster play Stormers in round 17, Leinster play Lions, and Connacht Munster. It depends what happens next weekend with Ulster. They've had a raft of injuries themselves, and a couple of more at Thomond Park the weekend. They will have some players back for that Exeter game, but they find themselves down in eighth. The Stormers will, obviously be trying to get some more results, and they're away for two games. to finish top, and then they could have that home quarter, semi and final possibly in South Africa. So it's really, to be in that top two is and finish top, is it gives you that advantage. Ulster played Glasgow, then Edinburgh, Connacht and Leinster Ospreys in the last one, and Munster home to the Lions. So I think it's Ulster or Connacht might not get in.
It is, yeah. I think definitely at this stage. I think the Bulls are
lovely to have the four of them. The Bulls got a win against Scarlets at the weekend.
Yeah, and they have the two Italian Carlet teams to play at home.
Ospreys Friday night, which credit to them, they're still in the mix there as well. And the Lions have probably been the surprise package. They're usually down around 12th, 13th in the league. They've been very, very consistent. Have to go on the road now. They play Leinster in round 17 and then Munster. So two tough fixtures for them to finish.
Yeah. Like, they're notorious or famous for their home form. So, like, going away, I'd imagine they'll drop one or two games. But, yeah, it's a mad situation that Ulster find themselves in now, considering the season that they've had. I think it's very, very possible that they miss out in the playoffs. Which, they're still in the Challenge Cup. Obviously, Europe, they have a couple of avenues to make Europe next season there, but it's certainly not an ideal situation to have that pressure on them now to go and win the Challenge Cup.
Could do at the weekend, really.
Yeah, no, I think they did the right thing.
So,
yeah.
Some of the young players really stepped up there and they caused monster problems in the first 20 minutes and at times during the game, but yeah. It's really tough now from where Ulster were. Very positive position there 2 months ago, and that's a look at a draw and trying to have more depth in your squad. They could beat Exeter next weekend. I'd fancy them to do that. Exeter will be tough, but then I'm not sure if they, who knows, Montpellier, and I think it'll be Montpellier in the final.
More than likely,
yeah,
it's a tough game.
If they can get into Europe that way, they'll take it. And I think if you were to win the Challenge Cup, get a trophy, which is really significant, and be in Europe, I don't think they're going to win the URC. That you need to be up in that, certainly in the top four, to get a couple of home games. And you never know, but you have to win three there. I think winning Europe would be acceptable to Ulster fans.
That's a good,
win the
that's
trophy
a good season,
and
yeah.
be in Europe.
Yeah. And they'd knock the eighth team out, wouldn't they?
The
URC.
Yeah, and that could be a problem for someone who finishes there. So it's really significant. I think the league is so competitive. It's great that you see it's so tight from third right down to ninth. And a lot can happen in the next two rounds, but obviously they have a weekend off. Nursed some injuries. Leinster losing to Benetton was a surprise, I think.
It's a strong Leinster team.
It was, yeah. I think they're still missing, a few players that make a real difference. Joe McCarthy, James Ryan. They're 19-5 up there at one point. I think, obviously, Benetton totally changed performance from the week before. They were very poor against Munster. Now, Munster played well, but they just had an anger and a kind of a fight and desire with them on Saturday night. That little bit of mismanagement, I think, on the field from Leinster, and probably switched off a little bit, and Benetton came back and got a brilliant win for them. I think really disappointing one, a deflating one ahead of the Toulon game next weekend. A difficult one for them to take, but Benetton, totally different performance from the week before.
Yeah.
What about Connacht? They're 28-0 down at one point away to the Lions. It was 33-7 with 5 minutes to play, so they showed real character at the end. There were only 12 points in it.
Yeah, they did, and obviously
too little too late.
I think it was, obviously it was, there's It's the gap is too big near the end of the game, and they showed a fair bit of character. They had some really good moments in the game, but I think some of the tries that the Lions scored were, I think, from a defensive point of view, soft, and they'd be very, very disappointed with that. But they're a very, very good side, the Lions. They don't have the Springboks superstars littered throughout the team, but very consistent and obviously have a lot of power as well. And yeah, to do it back to back in South Africa is really difficult, and it was probably one that doesn't surprise at the weekend, yeah. But they did show a lot of character, and I think, as I said, there's some very positive signs in the way they've been playing recently.
The Lions headed for Ireland now for back-to-back fixtures. Did Munster learn much at the weekend with their victory against Ulster?
I think there was a fair bit of pressure on them to get a back-to-back performance. They haven't really done that since the start of the season, and that's been a major problem. The injury list is pretty shocking after the weekend for them. You know, Tom Farrell looked to be in serious pain. Whether it was his shoulder, I'm not 100% sure, but he looked in a lot of distress. Calvin Nash, hamstring. Ollie Yeager, head, concussion again, which it's hard to figure out why it's keep happening, and there's a serious issue and problem there for him, and I hope he's okay, obviously. Yeah. And John I feel for him. John Klein went off for HIA, came back on, and
did his bicep,
and I think we won't see him in a Munster jersey again, I suspect, and Clayton McMillan indicated that. So I think the four players there won't play again.
Injured.
Yeah, he did something to his knee. And Ulster, obviously, Ben Carson was going around in crutches as well, as the Eric O'Sullivan went off. There was one or two more. So many injuries in that game. So did Munster learn much? I don't know. It's hard to judge when the opposition are missing so many players. I think they might have learned a bit about themselves in the first 20 minutes. Maybe there's a bit of expectation that things would happen. And it's difficult when you're playing a team that's perceived second string team.
Definitely,
to be honest.
Yeah.
That's the challenge, is psychological challenge of being ruthless. And you get that blast of energy from the opponents. And Ulster were very good. And I think that would certainly enthuse a lot of Ulster fans to see some of the performances from some of the young players. But Munster were very good in the second half, and I thought they managed the game well, and they were quite dangerous at times and punished Ulster. It could have been another couple of scores, but yeah, big improvement in the second half.
Someday for the Munster back rows.
Score four tries for John Hodnett is phenomenal, and
they might need him on the wing again.
Yeah, he was brilliant. Next couple
Alex
weekends,
Dellen, yep. You know, the tries between the two of them was it's just unheard of, really, isn't it? And I think I was really pleased for John Hodnett in particular. Alex Kandelen has done really well recently as well, but whatever about scoring the tries, I think John Hodnett has played really well in the last couple of weeks for him, and I think he's important to have him, and both of those players offer a lot when they come on and top of the ground kind of rugby. So to score so many tries was just phenomenal.
All right, folks, thanks a million.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie, subject to suitability, following pharmacist consultation.